Finally, and briefly, I would like for us to look at how the things we have noted in terms of, in particular, the interrelationship between the procreative and unitive aspects of human sexuality, previously enunciated in such papal encyclicals as Arcanum, Casti Connubii, and then at the Second Vatican Council in Gaudium et Spes, in Humanae Vitae, and then finally in the Theology of the Body of John Paul II, how these have been incorporated into and made available to the people of God in the Catechism of the Church. And I've selected only one small section, and I must point out that there are others dealing with the issues we have raised, and we have looked at, and we'll look at them again, particularly the sections concerning beginning of life and end of life bioethical questions. But for the moment, I'd like us to just note how the teachings we've observed are condensed down and even in their own way expanded in a way that gives even greater light to the Church's teachings on this subject. Beginning in number 1601, the matrimonial covenant, fedus, not contract, but covenant, implying a relationship between the partners in the sight of God, establishes a partnership of the whole life. By its nature is ordered, and I'd like to highlight and come back to this word, ordinatus. It is ordered toward number one, and I've put in these numbers. These numbers do not exist in the original, but again, I'd like to point out that there seems to have been a deliberate adaptation of and willingness to shift the older ordering from offspring reproduction being number one and intimacy or union of the spouses being number two in these official documents, the Catechism, and in the new Code of Canon Law, because this is a citation from Canon 1055, and it's also based on the text from Gaudium et Spes that we've already looked at. Marriage is ordered toward the good of the spouses, the bonum conjugum, and the procreation and education of offspring, not only producing children, but being responsible for them in the context of the family, and that this covenant is elevated to the dignity of the sacrament. So the emphasis will be on the close interrelationship, the intercommunion between these two ends or purposes or goals. And it's put in the context of ordus, ordinatus. This is an important word because it's often misunderstood in terms of church teaching. This is not a course on sexuality, so we will not be spending a lot of time on the question of the language that the church uses, although we have had occasion to mention it in passing. But the term ordinatus reflects exactly the emphases that John Paul II raised in the Theology of the Body, that we were created by God for a purpose, and we are ordered, directed toward a particular goal. And if we can discover this goal, this purpose, we can live in accordance with it, and our lives will be more fruitful, will be more integrated, will be more fully human. And so the language of ordus, ordinatus, and inordinatus, that which is properly ordered or not ordered, that is to say, not properly directed, is the language that the Church uses to describe the misuse of one's sexual faculty. Unfortunately, in English, the term inordinatus is translated as disorder, which, although that's a literal translation, carries with it in English the notion of disease, and I've commented on this before. That is not what it means in Latin. It means a failure to be ordered towards or pointed toward its proper goal. Perhaps a better translation or explanation of this term would be misdirected, not directed toward the goal for which it was created. And this is not a word that the Church primarily uses of same-sex orientation. It's also used, for example, in regard to adultery and in regard to masturbation. So the notion of an ordering implies God the Creator at the beginning, God the end who brings things into fulfillment, and the possibility of living in cooperation with one's perception of that goal in light of and making use of the graces that God offers, that one can live out the multiple meanings of one's capacity, and in this case of the sexual capacity, for the partnership within marriage, in a way that allows them to be a mutual, as we've seen, communion and acknowledgement of the value of both of these notions. The text in blue is simply my own comment on it, which I use in teaching other classes, to be able to link back and forth between other portions of the catechism. You can feel free to use that as you wish, but be sure you know how to use the go back button on your browser in order to get back to this page, because it will take you to a variety of different places. If we then move down to number 1602, to the question of marriage in God's plan, here again we have an emphasis on the end as a way of reflecting on the present situation. And note here, too, that it is marriage that is being used as the primary eschatological sign. Not exclusively. We'll take a brief glance at the end of this lecture at the text concerned with consecrated virginity. But notice that the Catechism particularly highlights that Scripture begins with the creation of man and woman in the image of likeness of God and concludes with a vision of the wedding feast of the Lamb. So it is precisely marriage, this wedding feast of the Lamb, that is used as the great mystical symbol of our goal of eternal union with God. So marriage and its value is being raised to a very high dignity in the Church, not only in so far as it is what it is as a covenant and contains the opportunities for ethical action as it does, but also because it is a very clear sign of the world to come. It is a reminder of that for which we were made and toward which we move. So marriage is an important sign, witness, and symbol in the Church. If we move down to number 1604, below the picture of the Rublev Blessed Trinity, and I've chosen this particular picture and added it to the text. It is not in the original text of the Catechism, of course, because it, in a very powerful way, symbolizes God as a communio personarum. God is a communion of divine persons. That's exactly what Rublev is depicting in this magnificent model of the angels that appeared to Abraham as being the primordial Old Testament anticipation of the understanding of who God is, that God is Father, Son, and Spirit, and that there is this perichoresis, this mutual indwelling of the three divine persons. Well, in 1604, we're reminded that we are created in the image of likeness of God who is love. Since God created us, male and female, man and woman, we have this complementarity, this distinction, the mutual love between man and woman becomes an image of the absolute and unfailing love with which God loves human beings. It is good, very good in the Creator's eyes, and this love which God blesses is intended to be fruitful and to be realized in the common work of taking custody of, that is, being the custodian of, being the caretaker of, watching over the creation. And as we've seen, the creation includes one's self, where the notion of taking custody and of having a balanced but not dominating, controlling approach is particularly emphasized. If we move down to number 1606, the reality of original sin, the reality of the world in which we live, is that this ultimate goal and this nature for which we were created, that is, this ordering within us, is often broken, is experienced as dysfunctional. And so there is, as the text says, evil around us, and the union between human beings, between man and woman, is threatened by discord, domination, infidelity, jealousy, and conflicts that can escalate into hatred and separation. And here the word disorder or inordinatio is used, and here too it's unfortunate that in English this means disease, because the idea is this is a misdirection. It is a lack of appreciation for or cooperation with what we were made for. And then according to Faith, number 1607, this disorder results from sin. And although it's from another text in the Catechism, there is a beautiful observation that this disorder consists in our shift from an awareness of God's compassion and self-emptying love to a fear that God is jealous, spiteful, unwilling to share a kind of a projection of the worst of ourselves onto God, and thus we become defensive in our relationship with God and in our relationship with one another. However, in number 1608, nevertheless, the ordo, the fundamental goal and purpose in creation, persists, though seriously disturbed. So we do not believe that everything is so broken, fallen, dysfunctional, that it's like some sort of horrible dystopic science fiction view of a future that is full of emptiness and constant destruction. On the contrary, the order persists, it can be perceived, and grace is given us. The incarnation and Christ's passion and resurrection occurred precisely so that this proper ordo, our own ordinatio, could be restored. And so marriage in 1609 has the capacity to be a school of growth, an opportunity to grow in virtue, and the virtues are in particular a freedom from self-absorption, egoism, pursuit of one's own pleasure, and an opening out of oneself to the other, to the offering of mutual aid, and ad sui donum, becoming a gift to the other, becoming capable of making of yourself a gift to the other. These are the things that marriage can and does teach when it's lived out according to God's will. And then in 1612, the incarnation is precisely the uniting of God with us in a way that saves humankind and prepares us for the wedding feast of the Lamb. Again, the invocation of this marriage nuptial image applying to our own goal of union with God. So a highlighting of the very important value of marriage in Christian theology, spirituality, and the morality of marriage itself. Now, we'll conclude now with number 1618, just a glance at the question of virginity for the sake of the kingdom. It's noted that that this opportunity for people to renounce marriage, but in a positive sense, not because it's a bad thing, but because there is a value to doing this, has existed since the beginning. Why? Because it's a way of living out in a different way a commitment to the image of those who go out to meet the bridegroom. That's highlighted and emphasized in this text in a particular way. Again, the bridal or nuptial imagery can apply in a mysterious way to those who choose to vow not to be married. And in number 1619, virginity for the sake of the kingdom, and again, this is not virginity in the technical sense, but those who choose to vow celibacy, is an unfolding of baptismal grace, a powerful sign of the supremacy of the bond with Christ and of ardent expectation of his return, a sign that recalls that marriage is a reality of this present age which is passing away. So marriage in all of its beauty, dignity, and powerful signification for theology nonetheless corresponds to the present age, and there is a deeper, fuller, and more complete union with God and with the whole church that is the human destiny that lies beyond this age, and so marriage is itself a powerful witness or sign to a union that lies beyond this life. And so there's the very helpful statement in 1620 that esteem for virginity for the sake of the kingdom and the Christian understanding of marriage are inseparable, and they reinforce each other. So rather like many of the other things that we've been looking at in this section of the course, there is not so much a question of which is superior, which is inferior, but rather the necessity for an appreciation that the different meanings and aspects of sexuality in marriage must be held as equally valuable, that they are an interrelationship with one another, and that both marriage and vowed celibacy are, as the text says, inseparable and mutually reinforcing. This notion of balance, of holding together, and again the very beautiful and even mysterious image of the communio personarum, the communion of persons, which is marriage, also applies in a kind of an individual level to our capacity to be integrated people who are, even within ourselves, a communion of our different faculties and capabilities, none in domination or rivalry, but in a spirit of mutual cooperation and, as this text would say, reinforcing.